Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Roger Teel, who is the author of This Life is Joy, Discovering the Spiritual Laws to Live More Powerfully, Lovingly, and Happily. Dr. Roger Teel is a speaker and global spiritual leader, and he is currently in Lakewood, Colorado. He holds degrees in psychology and religion, a Doctor of Divinity degree, and a Doctor of Religious Science degree. We hope to present his excellent ideas today, advanced spiritual information, consciousness information. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Teel.
I'm absolutely delighted. Thanks for having me on.
So would you like to give the audience a little bit about your background and how you came to write the book?
Well, I've been a kind of a non-traditional spiritual leader, minister, for a little over 40 years. And so, you know, over that time, I've done a lot of personal growing and worked with thousands of individuals questing to know themselves more fully and express their true possibilities in this life. And, you know, it just sort of came to a head, and I just realized, you know, it's time to put down some of these thoughts. And I don't think that I wrote anything entirely new. It's really about transformational awareness for empowered living.
Yeah, the basis of much spiritual growth is as you said in your book, you find yourself in certain situations, and you know, you get frustrated, you get angry, you get, you know, you try all these negative approaches, and then suddenly you get a kind of an aha moment and then realize what the lesson is in this particular thing, and then you go on and you get your next lesson. And
oh,
I noticed
true.
Throughout the book you were guided, like we all are, in a series of things that that really, when you look back, is a whole spiritual course.
Yeah, that's kind of what led me to want to write down some of these things. And I think that's really powerful when you can see the tapestry of your life as it's been woven through, you know, kind of peak realization times, the deepest wounding times, the greatest challenges. And I would say that that's why I titled the book This Life is Joy, Discovering the Spiritual Laws to Live More Powerfully, Lovingly, and Happily. I title it that way because overall, it's a beautiful tapestry, and I think that individuals often lose that perspective when they're right in the midst of it, especially, you know, in the midst of the stuff and the heartaches and the losses and things like that. It's so easy to lose track that something greater is being woven, especially if we don't let things pull us down irretrievably, but we just keep following our spirit. And I was blessed to be able to discover this in my life and keep on walking, you know.
Yeah, Carolyn Mace was giving a course one time, and she said that when you go from the horizontal type of existence to the more vertical type of existence, the vertical type meaning that you're consciously co-creating with the universe,
yes,
you have to either think you're going to lose everything or lose everything, kind of in stages, you know, so your relationships, your health, your money, your whatever's important to you, is either it looks like it's going to be taken away or it's actually taken away. And that is kind of universal for all of us who are in the searching stage. You and I have something similar in that when we were successful, you know, in relationships, in money, in health and everything, and then we had this emptiness, because I had the same thing that you did, an emptiness that there was more. And
yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that? Because that feeling of emptiness is kind of your soul going, you know, you're not really looking in the right direction here.
Well, you know, I think most of our culture is participating in a shared trance. And that is that the trance is that the material is the real.
Mm-hmm.
And that the way that life is all about amassing the situations, the experiences, and the material stuff of our life to validate us, to make us happy, and as well, then, yeah, to find our joy. And so most individuals have been oriented to looking outside themselves for what matters, and also for their states of awareness. And so if things are going well as they would like them to in their life, they have a state of awareness of peace, maybe a little bit of happiness. But if things aren't going well, it just catapults downward, and they feel a darkness. And of course, it's natural to grieve losses and have upsets and mm-hmm. disappointments in our life. Absolutely natural, and we want to feel those feelings and own them. But you know, the thing is that if we have an outer orientation, then we think we're a puppet, and that right. the way things go out there is the way things have to go within us. And what I write the book about is that no. What I had to discover, and sometimes the hard way, was that I could self-generate my states of consciousness. And that, in mm-hmm. fact, that's why I was here, is to generate certain states of consciousness, to practice them, and to return to them if I falter, but not be a puppet of what's going on in my life. It's a really rough, it's a roller coaster, and it's a rough ride if we're in that trance that the real stuff is out there, and my happiness is about getting that stuff, and my pain is when I lose that stuff or when mm-hmm. people disappoint me and all of that. So I wrote it about an inner orientation of getting back to who we really are and mm-hmm. discovering a joy that is within us even when things are tough, even when we're grieving. Mm-hmm. I tell you, Dr. Susan, I've just right now in the last month been working with a lady who's very steeped in these spiritual principles, whose husband was diagnosed only 4 months ago with stage 4 lung cancer, and he has mm-hmm. since passed. It was a very quick passing over, and she's doing some good grieving, and part of my mm-hmm. my work with her is just to be present for the pain and the grieving, and encourage her not to to avoid that. But I just the other day in one of these sessions, she was just, you know, the tears were flowing, and she recounted some memories. Then she looked up at me, and there was a certain look on her face, and she said, "But you know, I still know the joy." She mm-hmm. still was in touch with the basic, essential joy of life, even in this passage she was going through. And I found that so very moving, that she still knows, despite her pain, that life is good and that life is worthwhile, and so is she. And this is a stage through which she will pass, And that's
yeah, and her husband. Her husband can't die, so she didn't lose anybody.
Yeah, it wasn't.
We'll see him
it
again.
Wasn't.
You know.
Yeah,
he's still here.
That's right. It was, and that's the other trance, is that we think that life dies, and
it doesn't.
I point out in the book that life is a continuum, and this life of ours is like what Joel Goldsmith calls a parenthesis in eternity. Mm-hmm. You know, just a little stopping place for us to learn, to grow, to give, to keep our journey, our soul journey, unfolding.
Mm-hmm. And the beauty is that she is able to quiet her mind enough through meditation, she can actually communicate with her husband.
Absolutely.
It's actually very easy to communicate with people, get detailed stuff and real information, because often our loved ones are still with us to help protect us.
Well,
they often become our guides after they go through life review.
Yeah, and you know, I think the other thing that I write about in the book is the portal of the heart. And all through the book, I talk about my own life journey of discovering the power of this vortex, this chakra called the heart, and mm-hmm. finally opening it in my early 30s, and seeing my whole life transform, and then how the walking with or returning to an open heart position got me through so much in my life. Well, I think that the heart is also our portal beyond dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as we keep our hearts open, even if we're grieving, even if we're hurting, we do have the ability through the heart to connect with entities that have lived before, whether they're spiritual guides and way showers or they're our loved mm-hmm. ones.
Yeah, we don't really realize truths that are really, I guess, what you would call very logical. Like, if you're grieving the loss of a relationship, it really is very logical that there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of relationships out there that are still available for you to have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people think there's only one. Well, there isn't only one. There's many, many relationships that you can have. And then, you know, money situations can change overnight. You know, people lose fortunes overnight, you know, with stock market crashes or accountants stealing their money or whatever. But then you can win the lottery, or you can have all sorts of, you can have a relative you didn't know had money give you money when they just, in a will. I mean, money can change very, very quickly, too.
Well,
and so the whole everything can change very quickly.
Yeah.
So it's really important what you said earlier, that happiness is an internal thing, not based on anything external.
Well, we participate in the changeless dimension as well as this world of ours, which is mm-hmm. one of total change. Everything is in change, including our bodies. They are constantly cells birthing and dying and being replaced. And everything in the phenomenal and material world is a world of change. But, you know, when the great master teacher said to be in this world, you are in this world, but not of it, that was the clue to us to begin to be masterful in the world that doesn't change. And that's the world of mm-hmm. the spirit. And we are spiritual beings having a human experience. If we're just caught up in the human experience and we don't know that spiritual essence of us, it's a tough road. It is painful. That, I think, is really the true definition of suffering. But when we go through pain, but we know that we are born of that changeless reality, that we participate in a changeless, eternal, omnipresent love, a wisdom, guidance, truth, and we are of that our spirit is that changeless life, then we have hope, and then we have a foundation to stand on.
And the other thing that I really want the listening audience to understand is that we're in a very unique time right now.
We're
in a time that Jesus thought was actually in his time, but it wasn't. And that's a time of ascension. And during the time of ascension, all sorts of things are going to be right in your face. You know, if you're judgmental, it's going to be right in your face. If you're, you know, if you're projecting stuff, it's going to come back to you much quicker, so that you have a chance to change things so that you can make it through this time of ascension. You know, people don't realize that when Jesus ascended, he actually ascended to a higher level. It's a level where other masters are. It's a level probably where the Mayans went to. And when they talk about the second coming of Christ, Christ isn't coming back down here. We are ascending to the level where Christ is.
That's
so
right.
Christ is like over 2,000 years old in the same body. It's still a physical body. It's just vibrating at a higher level. It's not quite third dimensional. But we're ascending, so we're in remarkable times now. And, of course, the spiritual challenges are much more than they were, you know, say, 40 years ago.
Oh, without a doubt. These are the most transformational times I've ever witnessed. And as I study history, I think they're pivotal, because the crises we are manifesting out of our ignorance and out of lower states of consciousness are right in our face, as you suggest. And so now there's no avoiding that. Mm-hmm. But I believe something else, Susan. I believe that mm-hmm. we all chose to be here for these times.
We did. Actually, it was an honor to be here for these times.
Yeah, the most transformational
time. It was really important.
Well, these are the times where what my dear friend Barbara Marks Hubbard calls where mm-hmm. the emerging human, the whole being is coming forth. We are coming out of just material mindedness into spiritual awareness, mm-hmm. Because that's the only way we're going to solve our problems.
Right.
And this isn't just religious talk. This is spiritual reality, that we're meant to evolve to higher states of consciousness, and our problems are impelling us to that. But I think it also has to begin with every one of us, that we discover that inner Christ or that inner spiritual beingness,
mm-hmm.
and we start living from that place. That's what our challenge is how can I get centered every day, remember who I really am, that I'm not just my stuff, I'm not my money, I'm not my roles, mm-hmm. I'm not my predicaments. Remember who I really am and go forth to live from that and live from my joy rather than seeking paltry bits of happiness out there in the world. Live from my joy, from my gratitude, from my light, from my heart. That's when we become, Jesus said, you are the light of the world. I think that's when we really shine our light.
It is. And you also spent time in the book discussing how internal states, you gave a lot of really good examples, like the veterinarian waiting room, internal states are very important for what is actually occurs in the external reality.
Yeah. Well, that I think is part of us coming out of the trance, is that we're not mm-hmm. formed by our experiences. We are forming our experiences.
Right.
And we're forming them by our relationship to them. I love what Neil Donald Walsh in his material, especially the early books of Conversations with God, wrote, mm-hmm. that the real question before every one of us is, who am I creating myself to be in the presence of this or that problem or this or that experience?
Right.
So something shows up in our life, and whether we know it or not, we are answering that question. Who am I creating myself to be mm-hmm. in relationship to this that is now in my experience?
Right.
Now, most people don't know that kind of creation is going on, that they're making that deep inner spiritual choice. Am I going to be victim? Am I going mm-hmm. to be a puppet? What am I going to be? Or am I going to be aware? Am I going to be love in this experience? Am I going to be present to it?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to stand in the fire, as it were, and not be destroyed by it? We're making these decisions all the time. And
I'll give you a good example. Atlanta is well known for its really bad traffic during rush hour. And, you know, you can, every day that you have to go out and drive home, you can be really, really unhappy and really, you know, woe is me and I'm a victim of this and everything. Or you can say, well, this gives me time to, you know, meditate, to kind of relax, to think about things that I didn't have time to think about. You know, there's a lot of advantages to being in traffic, too. You know, if you have to wait or if you have to, you know, change the way. But essentially, you're learning patience. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking that maybe we have this really bad traffic because we need to learn patience.
Well, yeah, that's got to be one of my hardest areas, I got to tell you what.
It's a hard area for everybody. It really is.
But it's kind of in microcosm what we face because, you know, I have a chapter in my book called This Journey is Surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when I have struggled to learn the lesson that I need to let go. That
right.
My job is not to control every little thing except my own consciousness. And to flow with things. And just the other day, Susan, I was in the grocery store in my local Whole Foods, and I had a little basket. I just needed a few things. I think I had 6 or 7 items. And I went over to the line where it's the express line, you know, where you can't mm-hmm. have more than 15 items. And I'm standing there, and the lady two up from me, she had two carts, and or not two carts, two of these baskets. And there must have been 20 items in each one of them. And
mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I'm in my judgment. Oh,
right,
my goodness.
Yeah.
She was not safe on the streets of my mind in that moment. And I was all upset. But then all of a sudden, I stopped and I said, now, wait a minute. What if that was my beloved wife, Erica? Or what if that was my son?
Mm-hmm.
Would I be doing this? And all of a sudden, it was the leveler to me. I thought, oh, of course I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was willing to give her a pass. You know,
right.
and in that case also, to just kind of thank her for giving me an opportunity to transform in that simple, humble way. But you
right.
know what? I think, Susan, life is giving us those kinds of opportunities all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're being called to a greater level of maturity,
right.
not only humanly but spiritually, wherein we do see every experience as an opportunity for some kind of spiritual transformation.
And the one thing that we're doing here more and more, we go around muscle testing each other all day long to figure out why things are happening. We even muscle test to see if we should do surgery on somebody when things start happening. You know, should we even be doing this operation?
Yeah.
So with the muscle testing, we're getting higher guidance,
yeah.
and all sorts of things are being explained to us through the guidance system that we had no idea of. I mean, we just didn't even know existed. And so there is just a greater level of understanding available that you can do either with spiritual hearing or muscle testing or whatever you choose to do, prayer, meditation, whatever. You can get a higher level of why things are happening. In session, we do spiritual sessions every week since 1990, so it's a long time. But in spiritual sessions, we're told that many more times than we realize when we get in situations where we can't seem to get out the door, you know, things keep happening, or we get on the road and then all of a sudden we're stuck for something that seems silly, that spirit is actually causing us to not have, you know, the opportunity to get in a car accident, you know. I mean, it's like we're being stopped from something worse, but of course we don't realize that at the time. We just are kind of annoyed that we can't get where we want to go.
Yeah. You know what? I got to tell you, you, Dr. Susan, represent such a moving thing for me. You are blending the spiritual arts and higher consciousness with your medical profession. And I just look to the day, the founder of our teaching, which is the Science, Mind, and Spirit, Ernest Holmes, he said, mm-hmm. I look forward to the day when science and religion shall walk hand in hand into the invisible. And, you know, he passed in 1960, so he was a little early for that, although it was mm-hmm. beginning to happen. But you represent the leading edge. And there's a chapter in my book called This Disease is Discovery. And, mm-hmm. and you know, in that I talk about, because since every experience of our lives is meaningful in some way, what's the meaning? What are the gifts in those times of when our bodies falter? And I talk about three different kinds of messages, body messages. It may be that we're just not operating this body that we're in charge of in a mm-hmm. functional a way according to its needs. Or it could be an awareness message. We could be filling our awareness with all sorts of toxins that are impacting the body. And then it could also be soul messages. Soul right. messages from the depth of us saying, you know, it's time to play more. It's time to love more. It's time to make that big change. Take that dramatic step in your life. Or in some cases, it's even the soul message of, okay, your time on this plane is done. It's time
right.
to let this
yeah,
body
that's...
go. And you represent
yeah, and
that
important.
Kind of sensitivity that I really believe is also what's emerging as we see unbridled health care costs and unnecessary mm-hmm. drugging and all that's going on in our culture. It's waiting for this birth of the blending of spirituality and the medical arts.
It is, because the cause of all disease can be determined, including cancer, Alzheimer's. We've determined the cause of all of those diseases, and they are absolutely, like you said, a combination of the three areas that you outlined. The problem is that things aren't always just black and white. And like when one person has cancer, it's not always caused by the same thing that, you know, 15 other people have
cancer.
Oh,
right, yeah.
Cancer is basically a fourth-dimensional intrusion into the third dimension, similar to Morgellons and schizophrenia. It's very interesting. They all have the similar type of thing. But it's kind of a mindless eater that goes into an organ of low energy. So whatever lowers the energy in the organ, which is usually emotional in primary cancer, but can also be toxic chemical, geopathic stress, electromagnetic, smart meters are a big one right now. Generational curse, which of course is a fourth dimensional intrusion into the third by itself. Radiation and infection. There's all sorts of infection, including mildew, parasites, bacteria, viral, and fungal that can lower the energy of the organ. So it's actually very, very complex. But you can muscle test the cause of the cancer, you treat the cause, and usually the cancer will go away. So, you know, that's something that people haven't figured out yet, and we figured out with muscle testing. And the same thing can be done for any disease out there. And so once you treat the cause, and sometimes it is soul messages, sometimes it is the person has to make a dramatic change in judgment or in their inner thoughts, or especially judgment. Judgment's a big one that can lead to disease.
Mm-hmm.
It's pride, you know, the Bible talks about all of these things, but they really do set you up for physical disease.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's part of our learning as a culture is, and as I say in another set of chapters, this world is consciousness and this idea is substance. Whatever's mm-hmm. going on in the invisible dimensions of our deepest believing and our deepest perceptions, our sense of what life is going forth into creative expression in some way in our lives.
Right.
And that is something that not much of humanity has realized. But I think that's what we're also waking up to as well, is how immensely creative our dominant states of awareness are in mm-hmm. In attracting to us, repelling from us, and seeding experiences for us.
And as we ascend vibrationally, we create quicker and quicker.
Yes.
You know, when you're in spirit, what we're told anyway is that you can do an infinite number of things simultaneously and you create right away. You know, like you have a thought and it's created. So, you know, thank God that doesn't happen in the third dimension or we would be in trouble.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to right now.
I wish that guy would just die, you know.
Yeah, that would be a little rough.
That might be a little rough, yeah. So we are learning, just like school children, you know, as we advance from the second to the third, third to the fourth, fourth to the fifth grade, that we our thoughts do create. You know, Edgar Cayce said, thoughts are things, mind is the builder, and the physical is the result.
Yes,
and
I love
it
that.
Is happening faster and faster now.
Yeah,
I think somebody the other day was telling me something that they wish somebody would die, and then they died the next day. You know, so it's like they're sitting there going, "Do you think that had anything to do with them dying?" I said, "I don't know. You know, like I don't know what kind of world we're in right now, but I'd be careful about your thoughts." You know?
Yeah,
I'm not going to say yes or no. I didn't even muscle test that one. I think they probably didn't really want to know.
You know, in my book, I share an example of what happened for Nelson Mandela. After the years following his imprisonment, and to remind our listeners, he was in prison for 26 years away from his family,
right,
and
yeah.
doing hard labor, and it was a terribly torturous thing. And of course, in his initial stages, he was very discouraged, very upset.
Mm-hmm.
He had been working for apartheid, a very beautiful purpose, and now he was incarcerated, and
it
seemed like his life was going downhill.
But he had a lot of anger in him, didn't he?
Of course he did.
He had a lot of anger in him, and he had to get rid of that. That's right.
And then he decided that he needed to start where he was and uplift his awareness. And so initially he admits in his writings that he had to get out of the dark space where
right.
a part of him said, "It's not happening. What I'm working for, the justice for black South Africans isn't
mm-hmm.
happening. It's not happening." And that's a dark place. And I know a lot of our listeners are probably in that experience in their life too, in their experience where it feels like they would just say, "It's not happening. My dreams aren't happening. What I've really wanted
right.
for my life, it's not happening." But then Mandela was wise enough to know that he couldn't stay in that space.
Right.
He was wise enough to realize that he needed to go one step at a time, and he then shifted to practicing saying to himself, "It could happen. Even
right.
though I'm
yeah.
imprisoned, it could happen." And he stayed with that until it became genuine, until a part of him said, "You know what, it really could. You know, I got to look past this experience I'm having, and it could happen." And
mm-hmm.
then he got that sort of anchored, and he realized, all right, there's another step. And then he moved to practicing, "It will happen. It will happen." And he had to be with that for a long time, because when you're
mm-hmm.
sitting there in prison and you've been there for years and years and years, to own the belief that it will happen takes a lot of inner work. But he did that, and he really stayed with that. It will happen. It will happen. And then finally he incorporated that. He integrated that, and he could really believe, "It will happen. Even with me here in prison and some of my workers here in prison, it will happen." Then he went to the ultimate step, and he continued to develop his consciousness by affirming,
mm-hmm.
"It is happening."
Right.
And he worked with that, and in fact, he had this illumination experience that his imprisonment was absolutely supporting it happening. And it is happening.
He was.
Yeah.
He was the key. And let
yeah.
me explain that a little bit more. We are sent here to build templates for change. And
yeah.
he was a template for apartheid, okay? And what I'm doing is kind of the template for the new medicine. And we were told in session that right now I'm kind of like going through the woods, taking out brushes and trees, and you
yeah.
know there's a little bit of a path there, but it's all, you know, like got stuff on it. But this is exactly what Spirit said: in the future that path will become a super highway, and the thing we want you to understand, it's not even important that you teach another person to do this, like, you know, bring them in my clinic and teach them to do it. They said, by the fact that you're doing it now, others will be able to do it as well. So Mandela was a template for apartheid, but he had to be put in prison so that he would concentrate on it, you see?
Mm-hmm.
He became one focused on it in prison.
Well, any time somebody really anchors something, like Roger Bannister, you know, running the 4 minute mile, all of a sudden within that very year, many, many others accomplished
exactly.
The same thing.
Exactly. And he doesn't have to teach anybody to do it personally.
Right.
The fact that he does it allows others to do it.
Absolutely.
And that's something that Spirit was trying to teach our group about that we are template builders. And each of us, like you're a template builder within consciousness.
Thank you.
You see? I mean, that's your area. My area is medicine. You know, of course, I'm using consciousness principles in it, but we each have a special purpose.
Absolutely, and so everybody has to ask, what is seeking to happen in me? The other
exactly.
day, I was reminded another good friend, Jean Houston. Are you familiar with Jean?
I am. Yeah.
Her work.
I think I've interviewed her.
Oh yeah. You know, she there's a certain word she loves called, which is actually a word that Aristotle coined. It's entelechy. One's
mm-hmm.
entelechy. E-N-T-E-L-E-C-H-Y. Entelechy. And it's really one's inward unique design, which opens up one's natural potential. And
mm-hmm.
so it's like there's a divine coding in your soul and in mine. It's similar to the oak inside the acorn. I mean, if you give mm-hmm. enough love and nurturing in the right environment to an acorn, it will produce the oak that's in it, and,
right.
and nothing but that. And so what we get to look at is, am I providing myself the kind of creative environment, supportive, nurturing environment,
mm-hmm.
and am I exploring my entelechy, this wiring in me, this divine code, this dream of the divine in me that wants to work its way into expression in my
mm-hmm.
life? And I would encourage the listeners to explore that. What is the God seed in me or the divine mm-hmm. gift in me that wants to come forth in a way that will not be expressed by any other being anywhere at any time? Because everybody is that unique.
Yeah, and it's usually your passion.
Yes. Yeah, that's one way of accessing it, is what makes me the happiest when
right.
I'm doing it? What drives me? What purpose do I revere among all others? Or what's the creative and most unique expression that is so natural to me? If we can get over our self-criticism and self-loathing and take a good look at ourselves, every one of us has such great qualities and possibilities.
Yeah, tell your story about, if you remember it, tell the story about the guy going into heaven and being surprised by everybody that was there. That was such
oh.
a cute poem.
Well,
I love that one.
This is not meant to be any disrespect but to any faith, but I guess it's one of the guy does pass over into those heavenly realms, and he's been given a tour, and he's seeing a lot of different people having a jolly good time, but at one point, he's told, shh, we've got to be quiet during this part of our journey, of our tour. And so he's very quiet, and they walk along, and finally Peter says, okay, now no problem, we don't have to be quiet any longer. They walk on a little bit, and the man says, well, I'm just so curious. I've got to know why we had to be quiet back there in that part of heaven. When the rest of the time we don't, he says, well, that's where the fundamentalists are, and they think they're the only ones up here.
That's cute. Right.
Now, you know, it's pretty natural as we adopt our belief systems and our ideologies to think we're the
mm-hmm.
only ones. That's one of the twin sins of religion. The first is authoritarianism, and the second is absolutism. And
mm-hmm.
so when faiths begin to believe that they're absolutely the only way, and everything that is in their
right,
sacred text
yeah.
is absolutely the only truth, that's when the shadow side of religion emerges. And so it's, I know people get zealous, and they want to be the very best they can be, but I think another aspect of the maturing of consciousness is that there are many paths to the divine, and that's my particular faith path, the Science of Mind and Spirit, was really formed by bringing the similarities. By Ernest Holmes, he mined the universal spiritual principles from all of the mystic essence of the faith paths to weave together this modern spirituality, which is also practical, because we teach people how to pray, as I do in my book, how to pray effectively and affirmatively.
Because
we're not praying to God and we're not praying for anything. We're praying to awaken to the already existing truth so that it can work through us and for us. And so at any rate, that's the essence of that story.
And in religion, I noticed that there are, you know, kind of themes in different religions. Like Judaism is often about obedience, and Christianity about forgiveness, and Buddhism is about becoming still and, you know, realizing that God is within, you know, actually
practicing
that. So it really depends on where your, you know, where your most critical lessons are, that you might be born into that religion.
Yeah.
Or you might discover that religion in your, you know, in your 20s, because that's where you need to put your efforts. You know, that particular religion will be more beneficial to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's another interesting question is, how is it that I have chosen to be born in my particular culture or
in this
particular faith path? And how does that correspond to my own soul journey and what's unfolding for me? Wow, that's a rich one.
And the masters have addressed that. And what's interesting is that they say even if somebody is born in Bangladesh and only lives for 6 weeks and then starves to death, they said that's a great honor.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting?
Very.
And the reason that that's an honor is because it's an honor to come here to undergo the strenuous lessons in the third dimension because you learn more in a short period of time. And so... But what they said is that if you were born into good circumstances versus bad circumstances, like maybe being born in the middle of a famine in Bangladesh, you've earned it karmically.
Well, and
so that's something really to think about. You know, you earn your place here.
Well, yes, and I think the other lesson is how we who observe other people's lives tend to fall into judgment and think,
what's going
on isn't okay, or how long they live or how they pass over wasn't okay, or, you know, but we don't really understand. It's hard enough to understand our own soul path, much less another.
Well, some people just come in for a short period of time, like SIDS babies.
Yeah.
SIDS babies, according to the masters, are often taken out quickly because the parents have lessons to learn. I mean, that can happen. So say the father is on the borderline with something, and then he kind of, you know, goes into the dark area. He starts drinking again or starts whatever. And then the SIDS baby says, I'm out of here. And so I think that's why there's so much guilt around SIDS, because at an unconscious level, they realize that this is a test that they may not have passed. And so it may not be every SIDS baby, but the masters say that SIDS babies are given the choice. Do you want to stay in the circumstance, or do you want to go out and try again? You know, things aren't working out quite the way you want them to. You know, the parents may not be staying together, you know, whatever. There's all sorts of things. So at least in some cases, you know, the child is given the choice, or the soul is given the choice. The child follows the soul's choice. And the other thing that Casey said is that everybody has overlays. And so say you're supposed to be president, and you might be very spiritual, but you're given the overlay of ambition, because without it, you couldn't be president. And then overlays like alcoholism exist. A very, very strong soul will come in, but he's given the overlay of alcoholism, which could be genetic, that he has to fight against his whole life, and that the fortitude that he has to fight against the alcoholism with, of course, is a lesson, but we shouldn't judge him being an alcoholic because that was his lesson, you know, that was his test that we didn't have, you know, we didn't have that challenge.
Yeah. Well, so it challenges us then to explore the inner dimensions of our lives and understand that there's meaning in everything. As I write about in my book, some of the hardest times of my life, especially the deepest wounding and betrayal, was actually a catapult for me into heart opening and into all of the beauty that I've since experienced in my life. And I would just say reassuringly to anybody out there going through a dark night of the soul, going through a really rough patch, who knows but that this is a very powerful and at some level for you necessary experience that can reveal more of your beauty, more of your power, more of your potential. So rather than just resist the situation and hate it, explore it. Explore it and say, what's deeper in this for me? What is it seeking to awaken in me, activate at the cellular level? What's it seeking to activate? And as we do that, we start moving away from what I call the lesser story. The lesser story, which I got stuck in for a while when I had my wounding, was who did what to whom and how terrible this person was to me. And I write about it all in my book. And how unnecessary it was and how bitter I felt. And I could have limited my whole life by just getting stuck in this lesser story of being a victim and being mistreated by this person. But what I did with the help of some other people who loved me was I started exploring beyond that little story. And then little, I mean it hurt like hell, but it was still the lesser story. And the more that I started asking, what's the true nature of what went on? And what is it really offering me? All of a sudden, I realized it had very little to do with what actually happened. It had to do with my journey through this lifetime, and that I would either get it that I could open my heart and experience universal divine love, which is God, in my in my own beingness, or I could just go through a miserable life. It was up to me. And God bless it, I decided that I was going to open my heart and really live that kind of life. And so now I look back on that really painful experience, and I give thanks for it. I still pray for the lady who dumped me. I haven't seen her for a long time, although we forgave each other and had a beautiful reconciliation a couple years after the event. But I pray for her. She was an angel in my life. I believe we came here together to orchestrate this experience so that we could both be catapulted to higher states. And so I just encourage the listeners to explore that in their life. What's the higher state being called to me? And am I willing to give up, surrender the victimhood, surrender my upset at God and the universe, the feeling like it's given me something terrible? You know, am I willing to explore what's here for me?
Yeah, I'm involved with a group of people in a project that is going to help people who are falsely accused, okay? It's a spiritual project. And we realized that six of the people involved are named Susan. And Susan means she who is falsely accused. Did you know that?
Oh, my. No, I didn't.
That's the meaning of it, yeah. So all my life I've had all this false accusation, which now I just sort of shrug off because it's so, you know, it's so ridiculous. But the person who is running the project also had a significant betrayal about 10 years ago. And the spirit that is helping the project is Michael Jackson, of course, who was falsely accused terribly. So so it's so interesting. We're involved in this spiritual consciousness project with six Susans, Michael Jackson, and a spiritual scientist, really, who was falsely accused as well. So I think, you know, these are the higher lessons. The higher lessons is that we get together and you know, try to do something about it. You know, try to do something on a spiritual level.
Absolutely.
To stop false accusation, because it's rampant. It's just rampant in our society, as you know. And there's very little consequences for people who falsely accuse other people. They don't get put in prison.
That's
you know.
Good point. A very good
yeah.
point.
I mean, the person that falsely accused Michael Jackson recanted it, you know. But look at all Michael had to go through.
Yeah. Well, you're
so
doing
I think society needs to look
work.
At that. You know, what are the consequences for that?
Yeah, indeed. Well, you're doing some fascinating work, Dr. Susan. Just amazing.
Well, thank you. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. My name again is Roger, Dr. Roger Teel, T-E-E-L, two E's. And you can connect with me at rogerteel.com, and that's R-O-G-E-R, T teel.com, or the spiritual center I've served for many, many years, a very, very large center here in Denver, is milehighchurch.org. And that's mile high with just H-I, milehighchurch.org. And that's where I do a lot of workshops and a lot of other opportunities. So either place will be great. And again, the book is This Life is Joy, Discovering the Spiritual Laws to Live More Powerfully, Lovingly, and Happily.
Well, do you have any words of wisdom for our audience before we go?
Well, all I want to say is I believe in the spiritual magnificence of every being. And so you who are listening, I don't know you personally at a human level, yet I know who you are. I know you are spirit. I know you are the light. I know you are a being of light and a being of love. And I know that as you connect with that and perhaps discover it even more fully through my book, I just know that you'll go forth to live the life for which you are designed and destined. And that's a beautiful life. It's a life that contributes. It's a life that celebrates the divine. It's a life that knows that your inner life is your sanctuary, that you can generate the love you seek right within yourself. You are that love. In fact, everything you seek, you are that already. And as you understand that spiritual connection, then your life can begin to blossom in beautiful ways. So take heart in that. Now is the time, and we are the ones.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Roger. It's been a delightful interview.
Thank you so very much. And if I can ever serve again, just give me a holler.
I will. Thank you. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we'll be interviewing Linda Godfrey, Monsters Among Us, and then Elena Kahn on the 24th of December, Awakening Cosmic Reality Show. And then on the 31st, Dr. David Hansen, Back in Control. Thank you very much. This is Dr. Susan Kolb. Please join us next week.